Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault. The following presentation takes place at a forum for primary prevention advocates called Ending Violence Against Women. The following presentation takes place at the 2010 California Partnership to End Domestic Violence Legislative Action Day, Standing Together for Safety. Panelists discuss teen dating violence prevention policies.
It's really been advocacy efforts over many years that have brought us to this moment in time with respect to teen dating violence and this larger circle of people who are really engaged in teen dating violence work and who are really looking at strategies for prevention. The tide is really beginning to turn for teen dating violence prevention policy. And more we're reaching that point where people are recognizing that teen dating violence is something that should be addressed at the policy level, at the national, state, and local levels. And that's both policy with a big P, meaning sort of legislation, and it's also policy with a little P, meaning the institutional practices of our public agencies and our youth-serving organizations and how they are addressing this issue. Well, the first part of today's panel focuses on the national and state context for teen dating violence prevention policy, and the second part will focus on local teen dating violence prevention policy. I'm delighted to introduce AJ Perlman, our first panelist, who has flown all the way from D.C. via L.A. to support CPDV's Legislative Action Day activities, and she is Break the Cycle's state policy attorney. AJ is going to speak about the national and state context for teen dating violence prevention advocacy and implications for California.
Over the past few years, there's been a national movement towards dating violence prevention in schools. And this is really an issue that schools should be addressing because 40% of teen victims report they've experienced abuse at school. And teens spend quite a bit of time at school, so it's really the ideal place to be educating teens about dating violence. The first laws addressing dating violence prevention in schools at the state level were passed in 2007 in Virginia, Texas, and Rhode Island. And in Virginia, they passed just a general law that requires teachers to address dating violence in the context of their family life education curriculum. However, in Texas and Rhode Island, the legislation that was passed is really comprehensive that addresses education for students in schools. It also requires training for teachers and school personnel around the issue, and it requires schools to implement dating violence policies at school. Last year, in 2009, Nebraska and Ohio followed suit, introducing and passing similar legislation. And over the past year or so, at least 20 states have introduced legislation addressing the issue. So we're really seeing a lot of movement, a lot of talk about teen dating violence really across the country. The motivation for this legislation is coming from many different directions, although we've really seen a lot of momentum from parents whose children were teen victims of dating violence. And these parents have sometimes gone directly to legislators to introduce legislation, but we really need to ensure that experts in the field are providing guidance on the legislation and setting standards in the legislation to ensure that it really has its intended effect for teens. And so that's really something to think about. In addition to parents who are working on the issue, we've seen national organizations and corporations who are working to raise awareness about teen dating violence across the country. And even in some local communities, there have been collaborations between domestic violence service providers and school personnel to implement policies and procedures and referral systems, even where there is no legislation that's been introduced. Given that sort of national context, California is uniquely positioned to address dating violence prevention. I think California is sometimes on the leading edge of legislative trends. And with regard to what California has already done, Break the Cycle every year has our state report card project. And we actually grade states on their civil domestic violence laws. And we look at how teen-friendly they are and whether they're easily accessible to minors. California is one of only 5 states that has received an A. They received an A last year. And when we release our 2010 report cards, they will receive an A again this year. And there are many reasons why that's true, but I just want to highlight a few for you. Here in California, minors can access restraining orders and can file on their own behalf beginning at age 12, as compared to a majority of states which don't specify the age at which you can petition, if they even say that minors can access protection orders at all. The second reason is that people in dating relationships are eligible to access restraining orders. And this is particularly relevant for teens who are less likely to be married to, living with, or have a child in common with their abuser. And then third, restraining orders are available against abusers who are under 18. In most states, this is actually not even addressed in the legislation. So California's really done a great job of allowing teens to access the legal system, but the logical next step is to educate teens about dating violence and their rights and responsibilities around the issue. So in states where we've seen strong prevention legislation passed, there really has been a concerted effort by and partnerships between advocates and parents and educators and legislators to ensure that the best possible legislation has moved forward. So that's just something to keep in mind. It really has taken a push from multiple people all working together to get this, to get prevention implemented. So in terms of Senate Bill 1300, I know that Abby is going to talk about it next, and I know that CPEDV has not yet taken a position, but I just want to say that it's really great that CPEDV is doing a thorough review of the legislation to ensure that it will best benefit California's teens. There are some things in the legislation that we haven't seen in other states, so it's going to be sort of new territory for us. But at the same time, I realize that most of us in this room and most of you are really at the point where this current economic climate is, you're having to devote all of your resources to maintaining funding for vital services, and you're really just trying to keep your doors open. So with that, keeping that in mind, your resources really might, you might not have time to devote them to teen dating violence prevention legislation. But I just want to say that while some states have been working to sort of be creative and work around the funding issue, it's really important to not lose sight of the purpose of the legislation. So Break the Cycle has worked with a number of state coalitions on legislation. We've drafted legislation, we've provided fact sheets and legal research, last year, with our through our partnership with Mary Kay, we actually went to Oklahoma and did a lobby day on their teen dating violence prevention bill. And just after that lobby day, from the push that the Senate got, the Oklahoma Senate passed their teen dating violence prevention bill just a few weeks later. So realizing that you have many things on your plate, Break the Cycle is here as a resource for you. We're happy to work with you as advocates in California to pass strong laws. And we'd really like to hear from you as to what might be useful for you as you work to continue to support California's teens. So with that said, we look forward to supporting your efforts to address dating violence.
So thank you for that context about what's been happening nationally and what other states have done. Want to turn it now to Abby Sims. She's the director of the Building Healthy Teens Initiative at Peace Over Violence. And Abby is going to talk about teen dating violence prevention policy advocacy at the state level in California and highlight SB 1300, the California Teen Dating Violence Prevention Education Act.
Hello. So I just thought I'd talk a little bit about kind of some past efforts around teen dating violence prevention policy and then talk about what's going on now. So that's what I was going to do. We're all in agreement, which I gather we are. So one of the ways I first started learning about this after just working with adolescents in Los Angeles, where we're based, is Peace Over Violence, my agency, partnered with the Attorney General's Office and the California Department of Education to do training with school superintendents, school administrators, and deputy SUPs around policy and their legal obligations and how they can look at teen dating violence prevention policy. And it was a statewide project, and we went to all 11 regions, as how the Attorney General at that time cut people up. I mean, cut the state up into different regions. So we went to, so, and possibly cut people up. So I learned a lot. I mean, I was based in LA, and I'll just tell a couple of things I learned. One thing I learned is this is a really big state, and the communities have, I was completely unaware of that before. But I was used to working with LAUSD, which is a big district, and it's so hard to get the superintendent. And then I would call another district in a rural place, and someone would answer the phone. I said, oh, hi, I'm looking for the superintendent. That's me. I'm the superintendent. I'm the office manager. I'm the chief cook, you know, like, and sometimes I'm not here because I have to go drive around and look at the parking signs and make sure the people are parking in the right place. Like, there's hugely different needs in terms of schools and what they need and what would work for them and what would work for communities in that way. So what we came up with was kind of a guide for people to, for schools to craft their own policy around dating violence. And, you know, there are great parts about that because it can be really specific, and then there are not great parts about that because they may put something in there that isn't necessarily what an advocate would put in there. An example is, you know, in adjudication, they may have, oh, this is the way we adjudicate, but there's one person who's allowed to overturn whatever gets adjudicated. It's in our policy. Whenever that person overturns an adjudicated situation, they have not violated their policy. It was in their policy. That person's allowed to do it. So, you know, that kind of thing. So there's a mixed bag, but we were really committed to being respectful of communities and what works best for them and not kind of imposing a separate entity onto people in that way, you know, during the trainings, figure out how people can do this. And so that was the one thing I learned, big state. The other thing I learned was just, and this is in my kind of personal experience with LAUSD and others, is just being there. And I know this is really hard, and I know this is a resource issue, but not always asking for something. Like going to things, going to community things, being entrenched in your community, separate from what people can do for you. And, you know, oh, we're having a dating violence day today, so everyone has, you know, I want, can the school please do this and this and this and this and this for me? But they have a talent show, and oh, yeah, we can't go to that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like doing that. That really, there are ways to manage it, and it is definitely a time issue, but the people really, everything I've done and everything we're doing now almost is based on building relationships of trust and respect and accountability where people really feel like they can work together. And it's hard being on a school board. It really is. And you get pushed in a lot of directions. And they're really, at least our members are really looking for someone that they can look at and someone who will tell them the truth, but also someone who they feel like can be supportive in other ways and guide them through the process and just have that kind of basis of trust. So that's what I found helpful for us. Then we sponsored a couple other bills that didn't pass, so we learned that if you put really, at this time, they were comprehensive and they got hung up in appropriations. It was just people thought they would cost too much money. And anything mandated, you know, mandated education, for instance, really raised red flags for people around how much that would cost and what that would mean for a school. Okay, now the thing. So right now, there's another bill around dating violence, and I'm just going to say the pros and cons. I'll say that Peace Over Violence is a sponsor right now, but we're really looking for your input. So the pros are there's some codification around teen dating violence. There's some kind of guidelines for education. There are definitions that include things that I like in definitions, like things about power and control and things about sexual orientation and things about accessibility and sexual violence and all those things that aren't necessarily in definitions of teen dating violence. So it would really provide a framework for people who's like, this is what comprehensive or responsible education looks like. And it would integrate in the next health ed framework review thing. It would integrate teen dating violence into that process. So those are the good things. The not so great things are it's permissive, which means it allows people to do teen dating violence education, but
we're already allowed to do teen dating violence education because we've been doing it for the last 15 years. People have been doing it. So we don't necessarily need a bill telling us we're allowed to do it. The other thing is in this specific, the language of this specific bill has a very strict, taken directly from sex ed, parental notification requirement, which other states do not have. And I personally, just as a practitioner, was nervous about that because it would mean that we would have to do this huge parental notification process at the beginning of the year or upon enrollment. And if that didn't happen, then 14 days prior to the education, and it involves telling the affiliation of who's doing the education and what's involved and having materials available for review. And in terms of resources, what that would mean for a practitioner would be their school may ask them, oh, well, do you have a letter we can send to the parents? So that might be something else that you would have to craft. Or, you know, help us through this process. We know that we have to do this parental notification. The other thing that I was nervous about is that I didn't want to tag teen dating violence, this is my personal opinion, as one of these things that are so controversial that it turns into a parental notification issue like sex ed. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm just so what I'm just asking, and then if for whatever reason, and this is an unnamed source in my district said, yeah, we're never going to do that. We're just going to do it, and then we're going to say, oh, yeah, we didn't know, you know, when we didn't do the notification. And in that case, it increases the school's liability, which right now, you know, which they don't necessarily have right now. So that wouldn't necessarily be great for the school. So what I'm just asking people is there are little comment cards in your packets. And to just, if you feel, I really want to get a feel for how other people feel about it. If other people are like, this would totally work for us. Our district does parental notification, you know, at the beginning of the year, and this is great, then great, that's great to hear. If someone else says, I really think this would be a hardship for us, and I don't understand how we would do it, and I'm afraid school would say, oh, we don't have the notification. So just write on your Karman card, and I will take that back with me. Everything I learned, I think the PPRC process, and Marcy Fukuroda and Eve Sheedy and Ben Shermer, who totally mentored me through this process, I learned everything about how to read legislation and figure out if it works for me or not. And it's been so, I mean, me personally and my agency, it's been so helpful to do that and not feel like I have to rely on other people. So I really encourage people to take part in that process because it's huge and super empowering and great.
Thank you, Abby. And Abby mentioned the pros and cons of SB 1300. And she also mentioned that even if SB 1300 does pass, it's not a panacea for school-based teen dating violence prevention policy. There's really more work to do to identify policy opportunities and priorities in California. So I'm glad that you encourage people to consider involvement in the PPRC if they're not. And here to share more information about current statewide teen dating violence prevention efforts in California and additional opportunities to get involved is Nancy Bagnato. Nancy is coordinator of the Domestic and Teen Dating Violence Prevention Project at the California Department of Public Health.
One of the most important things I really did want to talk about was to reiterate something that Lisa said, which is sort of the big P, little P. And since I'm with the State Department of Public Health, I'm not here to talk about the big P. But I am here to talk about how all of the small P's add up to informing the work that we do in terms of big policy and legislation. And so one of the first slides I have, and in your PowerPoint packet there, is really that we need to think about ways that we use the small P and the big P, because a lot of times we think only about we need legislation to either make certain laws that we have to do things or certain things mandated or about funding, but there are a lot of things that we can do at the local level to create organizational changes and practices that will then inform social norms change. Because all of you here doing the work for a lot of years, it's really about creating that sustainable change within our communities, as well as some of those legal types of sanctions and practices that we want to influence. So my important thing that I want to say in terms of the public health department is we all have a role to play. So as Abby said, you all have a role at the local level, and I can't tell you how many folks I've talked to who say, well, I can't do policy work because I can't lobby. And that's just not true in the sense of you can be involved in a lot of policy work that has nothing to do with lobbying. It has to do with providing those resources and information and education and research to inform policymakers and key decision makers. So one of the important parts about this slide is good policy really has to do with making sure that there are connections between you at the local level and the work that you're doing and the folks at the state level. So those partnerships that help us to develop good policy are really about meeting what the needs are at your local community. Are there resources to then, we talked about funding for different types of things, but is there also an infrastructure in place? So it doesn't do me any good or anyone else to create policy or policy changes where there's no chance of that being successful because you at the local level don't either have the resources or you don't have the infrastructure in place to be either in compliance with that policy or to really set that forward. So one of the things that Lisa asked me to talk a little bit about is that we're involved with the Department of Public Health, our violence prevention unit. We're doing a lot for teen dating violence prevention right now, a lot of statewide activities. And so the most important thing that I see as our role in public health in order to support the work that you're all doing in policy is first and foremost looking at raising that as a public health priority. And one of the things that we're doing is looking at data and surveillance systems, the research, because all of the folks sitting at these tables and you in those chairs, we can't advocate for the work we want to do if we don't have good data and information that supports that good work that we want to do. And then to help analyze that research that says, okay, here's how to translate some of that research into practice, and here's how to make sure that those policymakers have good information that backs up what we want to do. And one of the most important things, everyone here at this table, these two tables today, all of these organizations are on a teen dating violence prevention team that I'm coordinating right now as part of a CDC project, and we're all sort of building those state-level partnerships around not only our prevention efforts and what types of technical assistance and training we're doing, but also, as Lisa said with that other document, we're looking for shared strategic directions and ways that we can move policy forward. So the other thing here is to strengthen capacity of local practitioners. So part of what we're doing is also looking at ways to provide technical assistance and training that builds better understanding of what are the issues around teen dating violence, what are the risk and protective factors, what are the things that you need to know at the local level as well as us at the state level to inform the work that we're doing. So part of that is also about not only strengthening providers' activities, but also those folks in your community a better understanding of what teen dating violence is. So, for example, we had a great conversation around even the term teen dating violence. And folks said, you know, teens don't even relate to that. Adolescent relationship abuse, romantic relationships, what are all the different terms that we're using? So part of it is really about building our common understanding about how we frame the issue around teen dating violence. And then the last one down there, fund local teen dating violence prevention projects. We're funding 6 projects right now, demonstration projects, so that we can learn at the local level. And also to build our further capacity to support and evaluate our prevention efforts through developing statewide collaboration plans. So our current projects, we have 3 of those right now. Which are listed there for you. And the current statewide activities that I think are really going to inform and be useful to all of you are we just are completing a data inventory, and this is really exciting. We're looking at what current data exists around the state, either it's through California Healthy Kids surveys or through the youth behavioral risk surveillance systems, what types of data is already out there, and we're pulling that together, and we're going to have that put together in a report for all of you so that you have that at your fingertips. We're also doing some environmental and policy scans that will help us to better understand what's happening around teen dating violence around the state, what type of support there is for policy work around the state, and we're going to share that with you as well. We're doing key informant interviews for the same types of information to see what's happening, give us a better sense of how we can better drive our prevention programs. We're evaluating the Men of Strength clubs. That's part of the Rape Prevention Education Program with CalCASA. And we're also, as I mentioned, funding 6 demonstration projects. And out of that's going to come evaluation and case studies that, again, you can learn from to help drive policy. We're doing statewide technical assistance and training activities, intensive technical assistance and training, but also regional meetings. We're doing joint TAT activities. And then two important pieces, again, that are an opportunity for you to get involved in policy work and talk about issues at your local level is our Teen Dating Violence Forum that'll be in July, and also a statewide summit that's happening in April of 2011. So two important documents that we're going to have that are coming out as a result of some of these teen dating violence prevention projects are one document, Program Policy Recommendations for Teen Dating Violence Prevention in California. And again, as I mentioned, all the folks sitting at these tables, these organizations are participating with us in this. And also a coordination plan that looks at what's happening around the state and how can we better coordinate our efforts, especially when we have limited resources. So just a couple of things to leave you with in terms of the local level, for all of you to really be data-driven, find ways to articulate what your needs are at the local level and have that data in your hands and clearly articulate so that when policy opportunities do come up, that you're able to make your case for the local level. You need to evaluate your current programs and projects to make sure that you have what's successful in our community, where do we need resources, what types of promising strategies do we need to do more of, and look for policy implications that can help further those. Be a voice. Abby and others talked about this. To get involved at the local level, CalCASA, CPEDV, our VPU TDV forum, there are a lot of opportunities for you to be a voice for your community and to get involved. So in closing, policy changes can help us to move through approved practices and institutional changes, but also to look at acquiring key resources. And we can only do that when we make sure that we're building and sustaining our current efforts for prevention. In a way that when we look at our scarce resources, one of the things that I thought about in terms of all of you and looking for funding is that prevention policy work is a great opportunity for you to look at your organizational changes and capacity that don't require a lot of funding. So those kinds of things you can do to plan for future efforts when we do have more funding for prevention. Thank you.
Thank you, AJ, Abby, and Nancy. That was really great to hear a little bit about the national context, some state level work happening, and to really hear the importance of those connections between the local and the state and the national. So really appreciate your comments. The second part really does dive deeper into local policy, local teen dating violence prevention policy. And I'm honored to introduce Debbie Lee from the Family Violence Prevention Fund. Debbie is currently leading the Start Strong Building Healthy Teen Relationships Initiative. And she's going to talk to you about some of the lessons they're learning from that initiative, emerging directions, opportunities, and challenges for local level teen dating violence prevention policy and practice. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you. Hi, it's great to be here. I used to work with the what we call the Alliance, your coalition here, on 273.5 and marriage license fees. So I've had quite a history in working on legislation, so it's nice to be back. And I've worked in health for a long time and now run the Start Strong Initiative, which is funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and they chose us as the National Program Office. And they're funding 11 sites throughout the country, two of them being here, POV and Tatiana Family Violence Law Center. And they've invested about $18 million over 4 years, so it's quite an investment. It's very much based off of a public health model, very similar to what the CDC came out with, Choose Respect. Basically, this is not rocket science, it's what you all know, but there are basically four elements to it. One is working with teens directly in the schools. The second part is educating and engaging influencers, and we've focused on parents because there isn't much going on with parents, and we'll be having a campaign that'll be rolling out soon, as well as older teens. And I really want to emphasize that because I forgot to say that The focus of this initiative, unlike a lot of the work that's gone on in teen dating violence, has usually focused on high school kids, rightfully so, because teens at that age, they know that they're dating. In the 11 to 14-year-olds, yes, there are some communities where absolutely you see dating at 11, but it's sort of on the edge. Oftentimes, dating isn't happening, in quote unquote, until 13 or 14. But my colleagues always say, which was a good reminder for me who has an 11-year-old, that when these kids go out on a group at 11 years old to see a movie, it is kind of dating. So dating now, as I think Nancy mentioned, is maybe the wrong word, but when you say dating to them, they understand what you're talking about. So basically, back to the four elements. Thirdly, it's changing policy and environment, and that's what we're really here to talk about today. And then lastly is implementing communication strategies and social marketing, which is so important in this age group because, yes, they're at school and we can try and engage them at school, but so much happens for them, as you know, if you have kids, on the internet, on TV, and in the media. And it is just such an important place to really reach kids. The fifth piece of the project, which I want to say, is that it's so important to really engage youth, engage them in their leadership. In our case, we're having high school students really think about and implement educational types of activities with kids. One of our sites in Boston used a nutritional label as a tool for folks who work with teens to look at the top 10 songs of the year and determine are those healthy messages or not, and then to go out into the news and to talk to other kids about this. Things like using the Oscars, using all kinds of activities. You've got two great examples here in California where very much engaging youth. I think we have a lot to learn in particular from the youth engagement community. I think we think, as a DV field, think that we're working with kids, but they really know how to do this well and so creatively. I really urge you to turn to them for different ideas. I just wanted to mention the two curricula that we are utilizing because the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is so very scientifically based. They wanted us to pick up and recommend to the 11 sites that we're working with to use either Safe Dates or 4thR. I think you have, I won't go over these now, but they are very much evidence-based. Safe Dates is a 9-session curricula, very straightforward. It's being revised this year. 4thR is much more based in a social-emotional learning theory program, and it is combining other risk factor issues to teach better skills. I want to talk now about school policy, that being not on the legislative level, but at the school level. Most of the focus has really been on bullying and sexual harassment, which is really great. You should look at the school policies there. There's just some excellent work that's been done over a number of years, so they've improved them. And I think it's important to look at those policies within your schools or district because, of course, the school is going to want to model any policy that expands it to teen dating violence similarly. Most of the school policies have focused on high school. And so the challenge in our project of Start Strong, Building Healthy Teen Relationships, has been that we're moving to middle school. And you want to really think about, when you do move to middle school, you really do have to think about the fact that these kids don't necessarily relate to dating. Some are, as I've mentioned, but the parents in the districts are always very concerned. We did focus groups where parents really said, oh, my kids aren't dating, but we know, you know, other kids in the school are. So there's a hesitancy about addressing this really straightforwardly. So it's just something that really needs to be thought about. And much of the policies are much more identifying when it happens and then what a school should do about it. And I think what we really want to move to in this new direction is to think about how do we prevent it? How do we build on some of the trends that are going on in the federal government right now? In the Obama administration, there's a lot of move towards promoting positive behavior support, which is what we would all like, where schools really have accountable relationships between parents and, between teachers and administration, between teachers and students, and really promoting the positive behavior that goes on in schools and supporting that. I think schools are very much wanting to go this direction. Of course, funding and all of their demands is really making it, you know, them all have a hard time. But if the administration is successful, positive behavior support, if that were to really pass, I think would solve some of our issues, many of our issues. In VAWA 2005, we did pass a piece of legislation supporting teens through education and protection, stands for STEP, but it has not been, funding has not been allocated, which is common in federal legislation, whereas in state legislation you pass it and you're done. But in this case, we're not done. But it does provide funding for the kinds of programs that a lot of people have been talking about, and I would urge you to figure out ways that you can help support this. With VAWA, which there will be a reauthorization in 2011, I think we have a lot to look to, because under this administration, the primary Congress people have already stated that they very much support the increase or the expanded support for teens and kids specifically. They really see that as the way to move, because we really do need to address prevention, and that's a very important way that we can do so. So I think we're going to have a lot of the support, and so this is the time to really lend your support in those directions. So both Break the Cycle and the Family Violence Prevention Fund, the agency I work for, we co-chair the Youth and Children's Subcommittee, so please contact us for that. Lastly, I just wanted to highlight some of the challenges ahead. I really do believe I think as you all probably do too, is that we need to move to the middle school kids. It's a difficult and challenging population. As I mentioned, parents don't think that their kids are dating. And I think one of the ploys that we've come up with is a bystander approach, is to appeal to the fact that you as parents need to teach your kids how to be a better friend and not to egg other children on, to stand up for what's right and support kids who are being victimized, and to say something to kids who aren't. Also, I think that we really need to know and understand better the relationship between teen dating violence and academic achievement, and other health outcomes. I think we really need to embed healthy relationship curriculum, not only in health classes. It's great to have a standalone curriculum that addresses this. It's addressed in eighth grade in California. It's addressed in high school as well through the family life classes. But I think if we're really going to talk about relationships, one of the great places to do that is in English class. When you think about English literature, that's where you talk about right and wrong and the relationships between people when you write an essay in high school, if you can all remember. And that's the time when it's a great opportunity to talk about respectful relationships, to have really more in-depth conversations. So there are a variety of areas, places, social studies, civics, talking about, a responsible use of the internet. Lots of places there that this really needs to be integrated. Engaging parents, as I've mentioned, again, the Family Violence Prevention Fund with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation will come out with a new campaign soon. And then, as I mentioned before, that it's so important to really work with youth engagement organizations. We have so much to learn as a field from them. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie, for covering some of what you're learning across the country and also for highlighting the importance of youth leadership and youth engagement. And so we are delighted to introduce our next panelist. Well, we're also delighted to have a contingent of youth leaders here in the room today as well. And we're delighted to introduce our next panelist, Michael Crumble, who is going to talk about how organizations can strengthen their advocacy efforts through youth-adult partnerships. And Michael is an educational consultant with Peace Over Violence.
Hi, my name is Michael Crumble, and I'm a previous student from Maynard High School, and I'm a part of Peace Over Violence group called Be Strong. But now I'm a South Central youth who is only 18 years of age. Being a youth, I could say there are many complications we face that many adults are unaware of. Teen dating violence is a massive issue that does not get the recognition needed. Dating violence crosses all racial, economic, and social lines. So the questions are, how can we put a stop to teen dating violence? How can you all as adults work with us youth to get us engaged? And why should there be programs like Be Strong and My Strength in schools? I have answers to the many common questions asked. But why am I interested? Why do I care so much on such a small problem? Youth do not have issues. They're young. They don't know what love is, right? If they were to be hit, they could just tell someone. The guy would be dealt with. What can a teenage guy do to a girl that can't cause too much harm? Adults need more programs because they're older, so their situations are much more dangerous, right? No, but this is what many people will say. That's why I am interested. I am intrigued on how severe teen dating violence is. I once was aware, now I'm aware, and I want everyone to know what I know. Teen dating violence is more of a problem for youth because we are so young, so we're in the process of finding ourselves and identifying who we really are and learning to build self-esteem and confidence. Teen dating violence is influenced by how teenagers look at themselves and others. Popularity plays a huge role. A guy who is viewed as a jock in school dates a girl who is viewed as a nobody. She will feel to date him, she has to do anything he says under his control and will. She will feel that it's important to accept abuse and whatever he may hand just to be his girlfriend. In teen society, popularity is like having everything. How many teens do you think are aware that they're in an unhealthy relationship? Can I ask a personal question? I expect no response, just a silent yes or no in your head. Have you ever been far in love where you don't realize the things you endured or put up with? You know, the feeling where it seems like everything is perfect and the wrongs you want to think is right. But when you finally have that breakup and you realize everything wasn't how it seemed and you ask yourself, how could I be so stupid and how can I not realize when it was pretty much right in my face? Well, many teens feel that way. They are not aware of what is taking place in the relationship. It may be too late for reality to hit them. Are you willing to lend an ear? Are you willing to speak to teens about this? How can you do so? Youth don't want to hear adult come in and give that mom and talk. Boys are no good, and boys got cooties, and teenage males don't want to hear you want to treat a woman how you want a man to treat your mother. You have to use stronger tactics. There's many ways, but first is to get a youth involved, more than one who actually been through it or someone who knows someone who have. Youth is going to listen to other young people, especially if they have been abused, because they will feel more connected in the things that they're facing together. Also, having a small group is usually easier to build trust. And usually with girls, if it's a whole lot of girls in the room, they have the snobby attitude, no one to say nothing, and it's just hate for no reason. And with a guy, they feel if they open up and say how they really feel, then they going out as a punk in front of their friends. Also, especially if you new on campus, it is better to stay stable. We view as more adults being nosy. And once they got their research, by they're out of our school and out of our life, and we're left alone to face reality. So it's very important to remain consistent and stable with the group and group members. Having more social groups helps not only teen dating violence, but other problems like grades, home issues, and just life problems in general. You also have to think not every teen is in a relationship. A relationship may not be their problem at that time in life. So it's helpful to mix up the conversation at least weekly. if you're not in a relationship and you're hearing about a relationship, it really wouldn't be that interesting. And eventually that youth will leave. Who knows, down the line, she may end up being in a relationship that didn't, been in a relationship that was unhealthy, and she didn't get the chance to stay to be equipped with the information needed. Now she's another statistic in teen dating violence. So don't lose an ear and don't make activity so boring. Also, I would say don't talk so much. Sometimes teens just need to vent, and they just want someone to listen to what they have to say. Humble teens, troubled teens are a mixture of all. First impression is also everything. So whenever the group meet, it's sure to leave a great impression. Don't come in so aggressive and stern. Just let them be comfortable. Those are ways to gain our trust. Once you have trust, you have it all. What many of you is thinking, it sounds so easy, but really, would it really be that way? Of course not. But it can be with time, patience, and practice. Think it completely through. We as teens get a lot of peers walking in and out of our lives. So one thing to think through is, are you really committed with going through? That's many useful strategies. I'm a teen who don't like for anyone to tell me anything. So if someone approached me with these tactics, I honestly will be all ears. These are strong ways to get youth engaged and start us to create a group such as Be Strong and My Strength. Also, another question I'm for sure everyone is wondering, how did I become involved? I have been affiliated with Peace Over Violence since June of 2008, and my plan wasn't to join and be so involved how I am today. I was just coming in for free pieces to get out my boring fourth period. But as I'm in class, I'm eating, happily paying attention and texting. And then all of a sudden, they started bringing up examples, and I began to pay attention. The example was, if your boyfriend constantly called you, it's like him being possessive. So I was the first to shout out, and I was the first to say, like, that's just showing love. Like, that's what boys do. That's what your boyfriend do, call you and see where you at. But the more and more coming to the class, my knowledge grew, and I began to learn how it was unhealthy and became aware of other minor issues. So honestly, if I have not walked in that class for free pizza, I would have not been walking around in an unhealthy relationship today. Be Strong has helped me through so much, how to get into college since I'm the first person in my family to go, how to make it in life while going to college, how to deal with life situations. We discussed girls' personal issues and had numerous girl talks. I consider Be Strong to be an educational lounge, and throughout my week, I would look forward to Thursdays. Thursdays, fourth period, were the days we met up. It would be Monday, and I would be telling my friends, are you coming Thursday? We're going to be talking about whatever the topic is. We knew whatever it was we was going through, Thursday would be the day we'd be able to get it all off our chest. Also, by being faithful, and the more I became faithful, I began to do off-campus activities like speeches with Peace Over Violence. I'd done a couple of speeches at the California Endowment Center. I also spoke at the City Hall with the mayor of Los Angeles. I also spoke at the Staples Center to Lounge Denim Day. And to me, it made me feel more important to be. So Peace Over Violence, I know, is just a volunteer work, but to me, it's like, this is my job. This is what I have to do.
Thank you, Michael. And I hope folks are taking notes, because there are a lot of good suggestions there and things that we can advocate for by listening to young people's voices and knowing what is going to be helpful, and then translating that into how we do our work, our practice. So thank you very much. Michael gave some examples of some local policy advocacy work she's done, including talking to the mayor, talking to the school board. So here to talk about advocacy for teen dating violence prevention in schools and local government is Tatiana Colon. She is the Director of Education and Youth Services at Family Violence Law Center.
Thank you. Let's see. Good afternoon. So after following up to her, I'm going to bore you guys, so sorry about that in advance. Like Lisa said, I was asked to come over here and talk to you guys about the work that we've done. I'm going to focus on the things that have been actually useful for us and basically what we've done in the last few years. The reason that we started doing a lot more work around the policy field was because we were starting to see that there was a lot more an increase in school violence that was happening, an increase in the incidences of teen dating violence that was actually happening on school campuses. And we kept hearing from the different school administrators and from the teachers and different community-based organizations that they weren't actually they didn't feel that they had what they needed in order to respond to the teen dating violence that was actually happening. So in order to address that, one of the things that we did is we helped pass some policies with the Oakland Unified School District. We started a task force, the Alameda County Teen Dating Violence Task Force, and we asked the city and county to pass resolutions around teen dating violence. So with the policies, and I want to preface all of this by saying that when we first started this work, we had absolutely no funding to make this happen, and it was just more a group of people that really felt that something needed to be done. And so we kind of did it, and here we are now. So the school policy. So like I said, we went to the Oakland Unified School District and talked to their school board, and we passed board policy and administrative regulation 5142.3, which addressed teen dating violence prevention for Oakland schools. So that we used then as a great leverage to then go to the different schools and see if they would be interested in us helping them passing policies and protocols that they could address teen dating violence on campus. We did that by starting to go to the schools that we were already working with. So, and we did it as part of a class where youth leaders were actually helping us implement these policies. So it ended up being a really easy, easy way of going about having a bottom-up approach and of implementing the policies on a school campus. So then we, after doing that for a little while, we realized, you know, there's a lot of people that are not actually communicating around about what's going on in the county about teen dating violence or what work is actually happening. So we decided to convene a multidisciplinary task force of different youth-serving organizations across the county, and we started meeting. And some of the things that kind of got us there were that, one, there was a lot to be done, and we couldn't do it by ourselves. Two, there was an adult collaborative that was happening, and we saw that that was a really great place for people to talk about domestic violence, but they weren't talking about teen dating violence specifically, so we decided to branch out. Then we decided that we also needed to assess the problem of teen dating violence in the county, and youth service providers would be the ones that could really tell us what's going on with the youth that they're working with. We wanted to assess what was actually happening with teen dating violence and really get the community more involved in teen dating violence prevention. And lastly, we wanted to also build their capacity to be able to respond so that more people were actually involved in doing the prevention work. One of the things that we did more recently is actually do the resolution. So last February, we went to the Berkeley City Council, to the Oakland City Council, and to the Alameda County Board of Supervisors, and we asked them to pass resolutions to proclaim the month of February as Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. One of the reasons that we did that was more strategically so that we can go in there, have a conversation with them, let them know about the work that we were doing, but also so that then we can pitch the ideas of developing policies for each city and then for the county. And what we found is that they were actually really happy to have us there. And before we even had to say, hey, this is something we're interested in doing, they came out and asked us, hey, are you doing any policies around here? And we're like, well, funny you should ask. Yes, we are. And we need your help. So that's what we're working on right now. The other thing that we've been doing is obviously the youth involvement. We actually have a couple of our youth leaders here from Family Violence Law Center. They've been really instrumental in the work that we've been doing across the county, specifically in Oakland. And they've done all kinds of stuff with us. I mean, from advising us on the feasibility of the policies that we were developing on each of their school campuses to, like, helping us actually draft the policies. They've presented to school administrators, to making arguments about why it was necessary. They've presented in front of the school board, the city council, the board of supervisors. But mostly they've been really involved actually going out into the community and teaching kids about what was actually happening and really staffing our events and doing things like that. So what do I have recommendations for you guys? So one, involve the community, especially youth-serving organizations, because they're the ones that really know what's going on. Two, get youth involved. No one wants to listen to me, but you guys saw this. She was awesome, so everybody loves listening to kids. Start with who you know. A lot of times it's a lot easier to get in the door when you know a school board member, maybe when you know a city council member, maybe you know a school teacher that is going to be your ally in this process, or maybe it's just a principal. Once you have an actual success, let everybody know about it. Not that many people want to be the first people who actually implement and kind of take the lead in something, but no one wants to be the last. Once something happens, let people know and more people will get involved. Once more people are getting involved, it's important to go ahead and go back to your first ally and see what else they'd be willing to pioneer. And then lastly, get to know your public officials. Stop by their office, introduce yourself, let them know what it is that you're doing, and let them know what your plans are. And more than likely, they'll probably be on board with you. So in closing, I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that I know that these are trying times right now, that there's not that many funds to go around to do the work. But I do want to encourage you guys to actually do what you can to go ahead and do that. There's a lot of little things that we can do to make that happen, whether it's a resolution, whether it's just like a little event, whether we're just passing out information on teen dating violence. All of that stuff works out, and all of that stuff starts adding up so that when you're ready to actually go out there with a bang, you have a lot more following. I do want to also encourage you guys to look to the partnership and the work that they're doing, and also to the different panelists that are here, and look to us as resources. We certainly would love helping you.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CALCASA.org.